So why consider an exchange? So who in the room's got a retirement account? Okay. So when people say, I'm going to have to pay tax at some point anyway, why not pay it today? That's a conversation I have with people. I say, well, do you have a retirement account? And they say, well, yeah, yeah. So why? You know, you're going to have to pay the tax at some point. Why not pay it today? So the idea is pre-tax, it snowballs much quicker. You keep that equity intact, you keep it moving, you keep it growing, and then at the end of the day, you're going to have some tax exposure. With 1031, you can, as Ken pointed out earlier, we've got the ability to swap till you drop. Now, you know, that's one of these things where I'm going to have to make sure we don't have this thing aired until after the final vote on tax reform, because our industry was saying, don't talk about swap and drop, because you have that elimination, you get that step up, and that's something that is really costly to the federal government, honestly. But, it's a great thing for people that are doing this stuff. So, bottom line, anytime you give up something, you relinquish something, you sell something, you gotta understand if there's a tax consequence. Even if I gave something to somebody, you know, I've gotta be careful with what I give somebody, okay? So if I've got a kid and I want to gift them cash, I can give them what? $14,000 per person per year, right? My wife and I can give that person $28,000 a year. If I gave them $50,000, what happens? I have to pay the tax, right? So it's sort of funny how that happens. But if we're, and one comment on gifting on things, think about this. So if I gave you $14,000 in cash, you truly got $14,000, you've got tax. I've got no tax consequence. You, the recipient, have no tax consequence. If we go to 20 or 30 or whatever it is, I'm going to have a tax exposure, the person granting that gift. The recipient does not. If I'm giving a piece of a property, though, I can actually accelerate those transfers while minimizing tax exposure, because maybe a $20,000 interest in the real estate is only worth $14,000 because that person's received a minority interest. They don't have control. So when we look at a retirement account, you're always in a situation where you've got all this money in, how do you get it out at some point, right? It has to come out. At 59 and a half, you can start taking it out. 70 and a half, you have to start taking it out. So we've got a great tool in that world, because instead of, most of our retirement accounts are something called a checkbook IRA. And a checkbook IRA, what happens is the custodian makes a single investment that's in the membership interest of in a limited liability company that makes all investments. So instead of taking a cash distribution, you can take a membership interest in that LLC as a distribution. And what happens then? Now you've got a piece of it, so we can discount that distribution. So you can accelerate distributions while minimizing tax exposure by using that gifting strategy or that discounting strategy. So, back to the comment earlier on guidance on the LLC, we're just one member of a good team of professionals. You want good tax people are really, I think, most critical. I mean, you've got to have good tax people, and maybe you wouldn't be surprised how many people have piles of real estate and no tax guidance. I mean, TurboTax might have an income tax component or a property component. Get a tax person, somebody that's good. I mean, it's going to cost some money, but they're going to take care of you. And if you're ever audited, mind just telling me to sit down over there, and I'm happy to do it. They're going to take care of the stuff. So there's lots of things out there. And one example of what, a value that they might be able to offer you is, think about a rental house. You go out and buy a rental house. Who makes the allocation between dirt and improvements? And what does that allocation do to your return? If you bump up the value of the improvements, you've got more to depreciate, your cash flow changes. It increases dramatically. You minimize it, it's the opposite. So who makes that allocation? Who does that today? You look at the property tax statement, when was the last time that was accurate? Anybody heard of a cost segregation study? Well, cost seg will take this building and break it up into carpet and tile and counters and lighting and plumbing, and all they're doing is taking the same depreciation but accelerating. So you don't get additional depreciation, you're just getting additional in a given year. If you go out the whole investment life, you're not going to have any additional, you're just accelerating that, which totally changes the return on investment. Boil it down to simple cost seg is a house to improve, the dirt to improvements. I mean, that's two, but you can take it 10 or 20 deep. So the thing is, good tax people, they're going to support what's going on. They're going to help you justify what's going on. And, you know, they might not be cheap, but they're going to save you. Hopefully, they're saving you a lot more than they're costing you. Legal people, finance people, property managers, you know, you've got a team of people. Take advantage of that team. And, you know, if it comes to looking at the retirement accounts, 1031 stuff, like I said, we don't give investment advice or sell investments. We just give that conduit out of what you don't want into what you do want. All right? So, why would you think about an exchange? Why pay tax that you don't have to? That's the bottom line. And I joke, one of the guys I hired when we first put the company together, he says, yeah, once in a while somebody will, in a seminar, I'll be all mad because they say, well, gee, you know, you're American, it's the right thing to do is pay the tax. And you know, it's a patriotic thing to do is pay the tax. And so he always used to say, well, gee, you know, it's the most patriotic thing to do is make as much money as you possibly can and have more tax to pay, right? So the more you make, the more you got exposure to, but until you swap, till you drop. So just take a look at that stuff. But the bottom line, every dollar you save in tax, you know, how much more do you have to reinvest in the replacement property? $3 or $4 more. Makes a big difference. One transaction will put you a lot further down the road. All right? So, why pay it if you don't have to? The biggest thing you're going to have to understand when you're looking to sell something is, what's the tax obligation? Do you have any tax obligation? And I'll be the first to say, there are people that will tell you, well, 1031 is one of the reasons the property prices are where they are. And that's true, because people will pay more, especially think about coming in from California, those bad Californians like I was. You know, we're used to a different price point than what is here. But the bottom line is, if I don't make this transaction happen, I'm going to have to pay X in tax. And maybe I'm paying, if I have a $100,000 tax obligation and we're sitting there fighting over a $10,000 difference in price, what am I going to do? I'm going to pay the extra 10. You know, if I'm outside my 45-day ID period, which we'll talk about, and that's the only property I've identified, I'm going to be moving forward with it. So understand, if you're a broker, understand who you're representing. All right? I do a lot of different meetings, and I'll be sitting in a room someplace and hearing people pitch properties or pitch money looking for properties, and somebody will raise their hand and say, hey, I've got a 1031 buyer, their ID date is next Tuesday. Everybody in the room now knows that person's highly motivated to make something happen. And then, so if you're the listing broker and you can find out where they are in the 45th and 180th and what's been ID'd, do you have more or less leverage? So what's the old saying on buyers? Buyers are liars, remember that? You never heard that. My investors started turning their head. I look at it, and people didn't used to like 1031. So if we go back in the late 80s, there were no ID rules. We'll talk about the ID rules in a few minutes. But in the late 80s, you could identify Clackamas County if you wanted. That's why the buyers are liars comment comes up. Because, well, gee, I ID'd the county of Clackamas. Well, you didn't have any restriction there. 91, we had some real tight restrictions come into play. We've got three different ID options we'll talk about in a little bit. But I would argue today that if you've got somebody that walks in off the street to make an offer, they're less motivated to make something happen than somebody in exchange that has a ticking timeline that has to be met to get there. So if you're the listing broker, do what you can to find that information out. If you're the buyer's broker, do not let that information out. Okay? And I've probably got more people than ever before getting transactions done inside the 45 days than ever before, because people don't want to have that problem. Yes?
Don't you have to identify that you're in an exchange on the acquisition side?
Well, no. I mean, your purchase sale agreement. So what happens is, contracts in this state are assignable unless they prohibit assignment. The residential and commercial forms, at least last I've looked, do not prohibit assignment. So at the 11th hour, you can always assign the transaction to us. So, and your forms also include cooperation provisions that give the writer the option to do an exchange. So it's there to cover all possibilities. The downside of those is that it doesn't put anybody on notice. So if you don't let escrow know that it's going to be an exchange, the deal could get closed without it being structured as an exchange. So I'm a fan of putting in there somewhere additional, you know, contingency or provision that it is, if you're going to do an exchange, put it on there. I mean, there's really no downside to doing that today. I mean, when I moved here, I remember those old MLS books? I mean, they were big, thick things. We had to go through those. And you would look, to your point, John. I mean, you'd look at those things and say, gee, 1031, and people that didn't understand it, they would shy away from it. So I don't know if any other brokers in the room remember have had those experiences, but I remember going back 25 years ago, and people would hesitate because it was scary. And I mean, I had a little more hair on my head in those days, so I came in from out of the area putting a concept together. We put the company together because we couldn't get it done. So I'll never forget my corporate lawyer when we're putting the business together. He says, "You're going to do what? People are going to pay you for this?" And I said, yeah, this is the way. And he just was like, wow. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's changed a lot. People are much more aware of it today. The purchase sale agreements in most states include some type of built-in boilerplate provision allowing the exchange, but I'm still going to say, to your point, you ought to put something in there because it puts people on notice. And then you've made a contingency so that escrow is going to get it taken care of. If you don't have it there, how do they know? Right? The deal can get done. And like I said, unfortunately, we still have transactions that get closed when somebody wanted to do an exchange and doesn't get done as an exchange. Right? As a broker, why would you think about it? You get a listing maybe because you gave somebody the opportunity to go do something. When we're looking at, let's say, in today's market, it's hard to find stuff, right? I mean, it's a tight market. People want a lot of money for things. I think where the DST or Tennessee and Common world, I think that's a great opportunity for people to get out of things that they no longer want. Maybe they're not finding what they want. That gives them the opportunity, a place to go. But maybe you get a listing out of it. If you've done your job, you're going to get a seller, you're going to get a buyer if you're the broker. Not only do you have a buyer, you know what that person wants, you're working with them, you know when they have to buy it, how much they can spend, and how much they must spend through the exchange. So that's a good thing. The last point is the most important one. As I said, we still have transactions that close. People want to do an exchange and they don't get it done. You got somebody that's happy. You just saved them pile of money potentially, and maybe it's the reason you got the listing. Nobody else mentioned it.